And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's always in front of you right now. The Healthy Planet radio show is part of our nonprofit health and environmental education organization, Healthy Planet, and focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. What we all want. This evening's show is about as important a topic as one can imagine. And while we've never done a show specifically on this topic, most of the nonprofit work that I've done and the Healthy Planet radio shows have been our attempt at creating this in the world. And that is peace. Now, I think it's safe to say that most of us see peace in our lives, in our country, in the world as something that we would love to see become a reality. It doesn't have to do with what political party we believe in or other things in our lives, but we just all really yearn to have peace. But have you ever considered what you would do if you were an all-powerful ruler who somehow had free reign to do whatever you wanted toward that end of creating peace in your life and in your country? And in your world, what would you do? How would you go about doing that? Now, to me, that would be a daunting task. And while I'd have loads of ideas, I wouldn't actually know where to start. The good news is that fortunately, there's a group that has a pinpoint focus on how to transform systems and public policy toward a culture of peace, from peace at the personal level to peace at the global level. That group is called the Peace Alliance, and they don't just throw around inspiring words, but have a plan entitled The Blueprints for Peace, and we're going to be talking a lot more about that this hour. We're very fortunate to have with us on today's show three leaders from the Peace Alliance Leadership Council, whose work and lives are focused on the lofty goal of creating peace. And as I introduce each one of you, in order for our listeners to get some insight into who you are beyond the name and the title, I'm going to ask each of you to take a minute to talk about how you got into this work, a bit of what you do in the Peace Alliance, and who you are, what motivates you to do what you do. And I'll start with the Peace Alliance Leadership Council Managing Director, Deanne Tate.
Thanks, Bob. Thank you so much for having us. Yes, I am the managing director of the Peace Alliance. I have been in the Peace Alliance orbit since the early 2000s. At the time, I lived in South Carolina, and I served as the South Carolina state coordinator. We had over 30 state coordinators scattered around the country supporting the bill for the U.S. Department of Peacebuilding. At the time, it was called the Department of Peace. And so I served for 2 years as the state coordinator. And so I've been paying attention to the Peace Alliance and the work they've been doing for many years. And about 2.5 years ago, they were looking for a managing director. And coincidentally enough, I was looking for a job. And so we came together and that was a good fit. So I've been in the nonprofit world in terms of my career all my life, started off in special education and have worked my way to this position. I have one grown daughter who's in grad school. My family would tell you that I was the peacemaker in my family as I was growing up. So this has been kind of my role in my life for most of my life. So now I'm appreciative that I get to work with these amazing people and try to affect as much change as we can to really see a more peaceful society come to fruition. So that's me.
Fantastic. Thank you. And our next guest is Nancy Merritt, the Leadership Council Department of Peacebuilding Lead.
Thank you for having us. I think a pivotal year for me was 2004. That was a year when I'm the mom of four sons, so I was juggling all the peace building that's involved with that. I was working for a civil rights law firm, and I had just finished 2 years of going back and forth between California, where I live, and Colorado, where my mom was terminally ill. And in that fall, I went to Philadelphia for to participate in election protection. And the election didn't turn out quite the way I had hoped. Of course, this was the second term of George Bush. So when I returned to California, I heard an announcement on the radio. See, radio is a good thing. That there was going to be a meeting in Berkeley about the Department of Peacebuilding. And so I decided I would go for about an hour. It was supposed to be a weekend long thing. And there were people there like Dennis Kucinich and Marianne Williamson and a lot of other folks. So I went for an hour, but then I couldn't leave and I stayed the whole weekend. And so I've now stayed till this day. And I think part of the reason is that peace building touches on so much of what's been a part of my life. So I grew up in Denver, Colorado, and amazingly enough, when I grew up, there was no teaching in the schools about Native Americans. That's when this country was trying to erase their presence, and so I thought there were no Native Americans left, and that didn't compute in my brain. I grew up in a neighborhood that was predominantly white and then became predominantly Black. And our family was one of the families that didn't leave because of white flight. And some of those things just spurred me on to being involved in my, also was very involved with anti-war things and that kind of thing. And just like so many other families, violence has touched so many of us. I had a grandfather who died as a result of World War I, and another, my dad was had PTSD because of World War II. My children experienced bullying and worse in schools. And, you know, I grew up seeing the Vietnam War on TV every day. So all of this resonates with why I'm part of the Department of Peacebuilding and Peace Alliance.
I get that. Great. Thank you. And finally, we have with us Yelena Popovich. Is that a correct pronunciation?
That's right. Thank you, Bob. Good.
And the Peace Alliance's Leadership Council Practicing Peace in Schools lead.
That's right. Thank you so much, Bob. I'm glad to be here with all of my peace building friends. Yeah, I was born in a country that does not exist anymore. So, and does not exist anymore because of the violence. I was born in former Yugoslavia, now the city that I was born at was bombed. I have family members who were part being in the city when the city was bombed in Belgrade, Serbia in 1999. So for me, peace is really personal to the level of, you know, being part of the war. When I first immigrated to this country, I really, in 1995, I started... You know, I started an education and I'm a career educator. That's what I have decided to devote my life. And with that, just being in education, I'm a trained school psychologist. So working at with the school systems on really understanding different learning styles, and, you know, how do we work with students, with educators, but also what are we actually practicing and teaching in schools? And from my experience, we are teaching and spending a lot of time on, you know, reading, writing, and math, which are really important, but we are not focusing on something that can sustain us being on this planet. And that is, how are we with each other? How are we with ourselves? How we are in a relationship with each other? And how are we in a relationship with this planet? So for me, that has been my focus for the past, 15 years, is like, how can we bring that education to be for that our education is actually really holistic education, and that we are practicing being as much as we are practicing doing.
So important, everything. And we'll get more into your work in education. Definitely. So, thank you.
Yeah.
Dan, let's start by getting our audience up to speed with some of the basics. And I'll ask you to define PEACE and describe what the PEACE Alliance is, how it came to be, what its broad objectives are, and anything else about the group that you think would be helpful for them to know.
You're starting with a big question. What is PEACE? We have these conversations regularly in our meetings and gatherings as we're talking about, the work that we do and how what we do impacts and creates maybe a better world for everyone. So what I feel like I've come to a better understanding of is that PEACE is really different for almost everyone you ask. I think I grew up thinking that PEACE was this end result that was this ultimate space, and that it felt very one-dimensional or maybe even two-dimensional for me. And over the course of the past few years, I've really come to understand that it's multidimensional, and that the definition of it is impacted by the lens by which someone is seeing it through. So what I would think PEACE means may be different than what you think PEACE means, or what Nancy thinks PEACE means, or what someone, it can be even impacted by lived experience. So I grew up in a very small Southern white town, segregated town. And so my lens of PEACE, I think, looks very different than someone's definition of PEACE that might have had a very different lived experience than what I've had. But what we've been talking about at the PEACE Alliance a lot is the idea that PEACE is a verb. And what that means to me is the idea that it's not this end result that we're all trying to work towards, and then we can breathe a sigh of relief and everything is going to be fine. There could be some element of it that would be an end result. But PEACE is, I see PEACE as a verb. It's a decision that I make in every moment about how I'm going to relate to the world. How am I going to be, as Yelena mentioned, in community with others, in community with the earth? Am I going to make a decision to say something when I see someone having violence put upon them? And violence can be lots of different forms, right? Violence can be a whisper. Sometimes whispers are the most violent. So it's not just physical. There's a lot of different levels of it. And so that's how I think about PEACE and how we talk about PEACE and the PEACE Alliance a lot.
And what you're saying is reflected in the work that the PEACE Alliance does.
Yes.
Not just focused on bullets and punches.
Right. No, not just that. I mean, obviously, that's an outward manifestation of violence, right? Is how we wage war on each other. But when you talk about war, especially in America, to American society, when we talk about war, and Nancy will probably get into this a little bit later, we often think about it happening elsewhere. For Americans, war is thought of as something that happens in other lands. And so we've been talking a lot internally in the organization about the fact that war is happening on our streets right now. War is people not having access to food. War is people not having access to housing. It's not just that global, international kind of picture that we have in our minds about war. And of course, Yelena has a very personal experience with that. And so trying to bring it down to, to the roots of what's happening under our feet, because if we can think about it that way, then we as everyday society, members can feel empowered to say, there's something I can do about this. When I think about international war, it feels so overwhelming to me. And there's like, I'm just one little person over here. There's no way I could affect what's happening in Ukraine, for example. But if I think about PEACE as being a verb, and that it has, it actually impacts, that I can be a conscious PEACE builder in every moment of every day that I spend, in every interaction that I have with others, in every choice that I make when it comes to what I do with recycling and what I do with, you know, my world, then it brings it down to my feet and the earth that I'm walking on. And I can, it makes the elephant a lot smaller to digest. And that's at the Peace Alliance, that's a lot of what we want to do. We want to empower people, give them tools, invite them into dialogue and activity and activation and mobilization to say that we all could play a part in making this change. And we want you to join our alliance to do that.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And it's, again, it's such a broad definition and a broad way of looking at it and different than what most people would think of as peace.
Mm-hmm.
It's a much more broad definition.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to add a sort of my definition, which we have luckily, Barbara Zalee has let us include in the bill, the Department of Peacebuilding bill. There's all kinds of technical definitions, but for me, it's incorporated in a Hopi adage that peace and peacebuilding are working together with all nations to protect both life and land and hold the earth in balance.
I like that. Thank you. This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. I'm here with three members of the Leadership Council of a group called the Peace Alliance, whose mission is to educate, advocate, and mobilize people into action to transform systems and public policy toward a culture of peace. And you can find out more about them at www.peacealliance.org. Deanne, your website reads, "We face staggering levels of violence in America and around the globe. The social and economic costs to individuals, families, and our communities are overwhelming. And yet we have far more effective root cause solutions available than we are currently employing." End quote. I'm really impressed by what you have, a blueprint for peace. And I'm soon going to be asking you to outline that. But before we go there, I'm going to ask you to make the case to our listeners for putting resources into the blueprints for peace and why the solutions offered are not just effective in terms of creating the results that you're looking for, but also in terms of saving money.
Yeah. So where to start? So making the case. So the blueprint for peace, I see it as a statement of values. You know, you often hear the saying, an organization's budget is a statement of their values. If you look at what they spend money on, you see what they value. And so the Blueprint for Peace for us is really a common sense way of looking at the choices that we have. I think we often, as I was talking about before, I think we often think of violence as the state that we can't really affect any kind of change in. It's just too big. You know, it's just too, it's massive. It feels out of control. I'm not the one that's creating the violence, so therefore I have no control to change it and fix it. And so the blueprint, if you read the Making the Case, we talk a lot about programs and ideas that are in service, that are in progress right now, that exist already. There are amazing numbers of organizations and programs and curriculum and all different kinds of practices that are employed all over this country and around the world to foster peace. And yet, speaking just about the United States here for a second, we are the most violent developed country in the world. And how can that be? How can those two things exist at the same time? So the blueprint talks a lot about how we will save money when, you know, that old adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, that if we focused on preventing and reducing violence at even its basic level, that we will, as a country, certainly, and as a world globally, will save money. It costs far less to implement the programs that exist. And Yelena is going to talk some about some of the education programs that exist, the curriculum that exists, that could be raising next generations of children that will grow into adults that have skill sets it will naturally be their course of living to be peacemakers because they will learn these skills as they go through school. Why aren't we doing that now? You know, why aren't we employing what we already know works in systems? And, you know, I think everyone, many people have different opinions about this. Personally, I think we have to get real, especially in this country, about our love of power and our love of money. And, you know, if we think about the history of this country and we think about the violence that this country was born out of and cultivated with through enslavement and genocide and all kinds of things, we as a country have a real love of these systems that make lots and lots of money for a very small microcosm of people. The Blueprint for Peace, it's an opportunity for folks to read what we could be doing differently if we just decided that we were going to put intentionality and excitement and verve and energy toward building something healthier than what we are currently living within. So we lay it all out. It talks about our five cornerstones, which is something that the Peace Alliance focuses on. Practicing peace in schools is one of our cornerstones that Yellen is the lead for. We have five cornerstones and the Department of Peace Building. So it's really six, but community peace building, personal peace, fostering international peace, practicing peace in schools, and then humanizing the justice system. And the Blueprint talks breaks down in each of those cornerstones. What are some programs that already exist that are happening right now that people could access if they felt so inclined to try to build that into their infrastructures, and how that could potentially shift the paradigm that this country exists under right now. And then, you know, we are, as the United States, people all over the world look to us to be leaders, look to us to be trailblazers and forward thinking. And so, not to sound like we are centering ourselves around the world, but that's really the way it has been structured in maybe the past century, at least. And so what we do here, what we commit to doing here, will have an impact on the world. Not only will it stop our perpetuating of violence on ourselves, but also those out there, and it will model how things could shift across the globe if we really wanted it to. So I'm not sure if that answered your question or not, but a lot of information there for sure.
There is a lot of information, and it's very clearly outlined on the website as well. I look at some of the figures that are put out by your organization. One of them, speaking of criminal justice system, is that reoffense rates have shown to drop from the current national average of around 65% down to as low as 7% when restorative justice-oriented programs are employed.
Yes.
That's very big.
Yes, yes.
And that's what everybody wants. I think there tends to be a difference, or we think that we have differences when we think of ourselves as right wing or left wing. And the right wing people think of themselves as wanting firm justice. But really, we don't want firm justice or lax justice. We want justice, and we want justice that treats the symptom so that we don't have the violence and the crime to begin with, right?
Well, yeah, and it's really interesting that you bring that particular piece up, because I think it's important for us to get real about why the logic that you just laid out tends to fall on deaf ears. I don't personally like to call it a justice system. I don't think there's a whole lot of justice involved in it. I call it a carceral system. That's really kind of what it is in my mind right now. And there's a lot of money to be made in our carceral system, from local police departments to jails, to lawyers, to judges, to you know, the court system itself, to the prison system. There's an enormous, and then if the person who's been incarcerated gets out, there's the probation and parole. There's all the, I mean, it's an enormous piece. And so I charge everyone listening to think about, it's not, if it were just enough for us to think, well, this is logical, this makes more sense, so let's do this. If that worked, it would have changed a long time ago. It's not only about understanding what could be done differently than what we're doing now that could help, but also understanding the forces that tend to block that progressive change. we have to really want our society to be sustainably better, you know, for everyone, stronger than we want to continue the systems that just make money off of this suffering. And I think those two things go hand in hand. It's a both and, it's not an either or.
Yeah.
Another statistic that always strikes me is that it's up to 60 times more cost effective to prevent violence than to try to patch it up after it's happened. If you even can. I mean, you can't bring back a dead person, but, you know, it's just so much more effective to look at the root causes of violence and the root conditions of peace and to try to prevent violence before it starts, before it erupts.
And that's the case with so much of the information that we put forth in terms of environmental sanity and addressing environmental issues, climate change, and everything else. It's so much cheaper to nip it at the bud than it is to treat it after it's developed.
Yes.
Right. But even in the climate world, even when you're talking about environmental justice, you think about the amount of money that is made off of the polluting of the world and then the solutions to the pollution. You know, I mean, there's it's deep, you know, and it has to, all of that has to be thought about and really kind of picked apart and examined. And then decide what we want our priorities to be. You know, what do we really want to affect change in? And how dedicated are we to make that? And that's part of what the Peace Alliance does. You know, our tagline is educate, advocate, and mobilize. We want to educate people and get people thinking about these different elements that block the progressive change that all of us, I think most of us are pretty smart thinkers. And we're all like, there's got to be a better way to do this. And I know there are systems in place already that can affect these better changes. Why aren't they working or why aren't they taking off? We want to empower and invite folks within this country to communicate with their elected officials to take what they're passionate about and parlay that into communication with the folks that represent them at the government level and say, this is what we want. As your constituents, we want you to do X, Y, and Z, which will make our world a better place, sustainably better, not just a Band-Aid effect, but actually address, as Nancy said, the root causes. And we do have the power to do that in this country. We just have to find our feet in that. So the Peace Alliance wants to help people try to find their feet in that.
Create the political will, right?
Yes.
And like it or not, as you mentioned, America is a world leader and other countries look to us. And therefore, as citizens, especially citizens who have some ability to use some of our time to speak out about these issues, we have much more power than most people on this planet.
Absolutely.
And it's so important that each of us uses our voice, because until something is spoken and put into the atmosphere and the discussion, it doesn't exist. And the more we speak about it, the more it exists, which is why we do a lot of speaking in Healthy Planet. Another example of how effective creation of peace is that one of your figures is that we see a 62% rate of international peace agreements when negotiated through mediation versus only 27% unmediated cases being successful. That's a big deal.
Yeah. And that's those skill sets. And, you know, Nancy might be able to talk to this and maybe even Yelena at the school level, you know, teaching children how to mediate and how to process conflict, you know, between, you know, conflict on the playground becomes conflict internationally or, you know, in the streets. I mean, nobody is born wanting to inflict violence on another. It's a learned behavior. And to that end, they can also learn how to do that differently and how to do that better. And what if we had an entire generation of school children that were taught how to mediate conflict between themselves and with each other? You know, if one school child sees two other friends on the playground getting into a tussle what if they could work that out between the three of them, and the almighty teacher doesn't have to sweep in and fix everything. They're empowered to do it amongst themselves. That teaching does exist. And I would love for Yelena to speak to that, because it is real. It already exists. You don't have to reinvent it. You know, it's already there.
Absolutely. And of course, what you said about being bullied in the schoolyard becomes bullying in the world. We have to look no further right now than Vladimir Putin, who was bullied as a child and then learned eventually that it was better to strike first.
Absolutely.
And this is Bob DiBenedetto on The Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. I'm here with three members of the Leadership Council of a group called the Peace Alliance. Their mission is to educate, advocate, and mobilize people into action to transform systems and public policy toward a culture of peace. You can find out more information about this exciting group at www.peacealliance.org. That's peacealliance.org. So, Yelena, let's go into the schools. You do teaching and practicing peace in schools. That's what you focus on. And I've worked for many years doing programs in schools with kids of all ages, and I know that they could be really receptive, despite where their parents are coming from. And often they have to nudge their parents in order to create the change that's better for them and better for the world. So I appreciate so much the work that you're doing. So tell us about the Practice Peace in Schools initiative and a bit about how it works and what you've seen from it working.
Yeah, so practicing peace in schools, and mind you, that is a shift from teaching peace in schools. Practicing peace in schools means this is what Diane talked about. It's a practice day in and day out. It's not I'm teaching a lesson one on peace, then I move to teach lesson two on peace or three on peace. It's a practice of peace that is consistent, because peace begins with me. And this is what I teach my little ones. Peace begins with me. So I work as a mindfulness director and a peace teacher in a preschool. And that tells you that we can start as young as babies to really model how we speak, how we interact, how is our nervous system when we are interacting with even infants. That makes a difference in how they are. How is their nervous system? There is a lot of neuroscientific research on this, that, you know, co-regulation is really an important part in peace building, because one regulated nervous system actually regulates a nervous system that is dysregulated. So if we start regulating nervous system at the infant level and then start practicing these interactions with our students, then modeling that and then letting them practice with each other. This morning I had a group of three-year-olds, and they are practicing peace. They are kindness buddies. So kindness buddies are buddies that practice compassion and kindness. And that is a daily practice. So one friend could not open their little booklet, and another friend came in and said, "Oh, I see you struggle. Do you need help?" This is a three-year-old child.
Amazing.
Speaking. Yeah. That is amazing.
Yeah.
So as Diane and Nancy said, you know, these are skills. These are skills that can be taught, and they exist. Mindfulness as a foundational way of how are we with our own nervous system? You know, how are we being? What are we practicing? Are we practicing being here right now with kindness? That's what mindfulness is, being right here, right now, with kindness and curiosity. So when we teach that and then start teaching social emotional awareness skills, which are how, you know, what happens when we stop? How does conflict escalate? Where can we stop that conflict from escalating? You know, when we understand how is our brain built? That I'm actually not a bad kid, that things are happening in my brain when I get, you know, upset, that I hit my lid and I can actually notice that and not flip it all the way. I can just, you know, be able to regulate. So those are all the things that are teaching these skills of peace. You know, and then we have restorative justice in education. When conflict arises, how do we solve that conflict in a restorative way? How do we repair and restore? Because conflict is inevitable. Mm-hmm. You know, peace does not mean absence of conflict. It's how we relate to repairing and restoring when we get into conflict. And then how do we communicate? Nonviolent communication. How do we request? How do we set boundaries?
These are all things that you would hope and wish and reason would be amazing to be taught in schools, much more so than remembering facts and things like that.
That's right.
This is transformative.
This is transformative because facts can be found on this little device.
Yeah, our cell phones.
Everything is in your pocket. Every information you want, and AI is going to tell us more than we ever want to know. So how are we going to use artificial intelligence to help us build the culture of peace?
Mm.
Maybe Yelena could say a little bit. There's a school in Washington, D.C. called Lafayette School, where they've been teaching peace to the students. Every student every week goes to peace class, and this has been going on for years, right, Yelena?
Mm. I mean, yeah, for 15 years, 15, 20 years. Linda Radin is a peace teacher at Lafayette Elementary, has created Peace of Mind curriculum that I actually use with my little ones as well. And it's based on mindfulness, neuroscience, social emotional learning, and conflict resolution. So all is integrated into a curriculum. And 900 kids every week go through a peace class. And that is a peace teacher in DC public school. So that is a reality. It exists, right? It's like these solutions are there. We don't need to reinvent them. They're there. We just need to invest in them.
And what has the impact been? Have they studied it?
Yeah, there. If you go to the teachpeaceofmind.org, you will see all the statistics and how these children from pre-K all the way to fifth grade have been making a significant impact on their social emotional development, on their ability to solve conflict, on their ability to, you know, just kind and be kind and compassionate. Some of it, you know, some of it we want metrics. How do you measure? How do you measure being a good person? And that is something, you know, how do you measure a relationship with a friend? Some of it is unmeasurable, but is witnessed and is felt. And I think we also need in education to focus more on relationship metrics than data metrics. And, you know, we're all about, oh, data driven. How about being a relationship driven? Mm. And I think that's really important.
Is mindfulness the basis of this whole process?
Mindfulness is the basis of the whole process because it's awareness. It's, right. You know, knowing how we are in relationship with ourselves, understanding our emotional lives, being able to be in with kindness with our emotional lives, and being equanimous with our, you know, good times and bad times, then we can be in a relationship with others in a much more equanimous way.
Mm.
There's a school district in Santa Rosa, California, where they they did measure the suspension rates before and after they initiated mindfulness and restorative practices and all that kind of thing. And it was startling. Within 1 year, it went from something like 162 suspensions to almost zero, maybe one or two at the most.
Mm, that's enormous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, when you think of it, but for people who don't know what mindfulness is, consider the fact that when we're sitting here, wherever we are, we're in our cars, we're walking around, we're reading, we're watching TV, there's the experience that we're having. And then there are ideas and memories from the past. And then there's planning about the future, and there's regret about the past, and there's anticipation about the future. And all of that is swirling around in us, and we're in the middle of it. Now, often we don't even know where we are or who we are. And so we have, and I say that because we're so caught up in either focusing on something else as opposed to what's happening in our process of us watching and listening and hearing and feeling and touching. And we're not experiencing who we are in that moment with all of our senses. We're focused on all of the things from the future and the past and something outside of us. And so we have a world where nobody is being who they are because they're not even focused on who they are. And so they're responding from a place of not being present. And they're responding from that place of anticipation or regret or looking forward or looking back or being caught in something or sorrow or hatred or not forgiving or whatever our pattern happens to be that we start identifying as ourselves, but it's not. And that turns our relationships and our interactions into a really mixed up ball of confusion. So that mindfulness component, just getting what it is to be present in your body, is so essential and so seemingly too simple. But in terms of what I've seen, it's transformative.
Yeah. And I want to add something. Teaching mindfulness is very different than teaching mindfully. And teaching mindfully and practicing mindful living, what you're talking about is practicing mindful living, anybody can do.
Yeah.
And I'm really encouraging, you know, parents, grandparents, teachers to actually practice living mindfully, because living mindfully is that embodied mindfulness that becomes a model of a human you want little humans to really be. Mm. And not necessarily teaching mindfulness, but being a mindful human.
Got it.
Well, and that speaks to what Yelena said in the beginning. This cornerstone within the Peace Alliance framework was titled Teaching Peace in Schools. And we currently have an audio 10-hour audio course that you can access on our website that was called Teaching Peace in Schools. And Yellen and I were talking about it when I first came into the organization, and it became clear to shift it from teaching to practicing, because we wanted it's not about a curriculum that a teacher is standing up there and just dictating have to's to children, because the children are the ones that need to learn this and the teacher doesn't. In talking about it that way, it felt like there was a separateness between the person teaching and the person learning. And so we changed it to practicing peace in schools, as Yelena said, because we wanted just that one change of that one word has an impact on the mindset of the person. So if you sign up to take the audio course and you're learning how to practice, you're not just teaching it, you're practicing it. So it's about modeling. It's about the teachers thinking about the environment within the school system. Is it a peaceful environment within their classroom? Is it peaceful within their school? Do the administrators, we encourage administrators to take the courses. Do administrators do what they need to do to create a peaceful environment within that school system? Mm-hmm. It's not just about the students interacting with each other. It's how do the teachers talk to each other? How do the teachers talk to the students? How do the administrators talk to the teachers? How do the teachers talk to the parents? And because the modeling aspect is so important, we felt like we needed to change that word from teaching to practicing to really try to encourage and invite everybody that touches a school environment with the idea of modeling the behavior and internalizing it and learning it for themselves, even if they're not in charge of the curriculum. How do they move through space? And that's how it blossoms out. You know, I mean, and if anyone listening thinks that, you know, this isn't about let's all hold hands. This isn't about like people think of the peace movement as back in the 60s and trying to stop the war and kumbaya and singing songs and all of that. It's not about that. It's about practical. We see this every day. You know, every day in the news, we have another mass shooting. The people that are picking up those guns and are choosing to mow down other human beings are coming from environments that did not teach them exactly what Yelena was just talking about. Knowing where their feet were, knowing where they are in space. How do they impact others? How do they ask for what they need? How do they set healthy boundaries? How do they say, I'm hurting and I need help? They don't know how to do these things. And that is creating this environment. It's like a petri dish, and it's creating this environment where what's coming out of that, what's growing out of that, is enormous amounts of violence, which is devastating. You know, in one mass shooting, you can end up devastating tens of families, you know, from a school or a church or a concert or whatever. And, you know, could be upwards of hundreds of families that are impacted by that one moment in time. And so if anyone listening thinks that, you know, that this doesn't impact them, maybe they don't have kids or the kids are grown or, you know, they've never known anybody that's been impacted by that kind of violence. They see it on the news, but they feel removed from it. It is touching all of us, regardless of how close we are to these tragedies. And, you know, it kind of segues to Nancy to talk about the Department of Peacebuilding, because yes, that's why we focus on that bill, is to create the infrastructure to try to do what Yelena just talked about on the macro level and the micro level to make this world better. It's got to take action by all of us.
And that's a Practicing Peace in Schools 10-week audio course that is available at www.peacealliance.org, correct?
Yes, yes.
All right, great.
Under the Educate tab on the main menu, you can find the course there.
All right, Nancy, let's give it over to you now. Talk about the Department of Peacebuilding legislation.
Well, I think what Yelena was saying, practice peace in schools, that peacebuilding and the legislation is really about all of us practicing being our best selves all the time. And to me, the bill is the two main words I think that would come to mind would be prevention, violence prevention, and interconnection, how we're all interconnected. Peace building is just reflected in every part of society. I could tell you a little bit about the bill. The structure of the bill calls for several offices within the bill, within the Department of Peacebuilding, and you'll see that this is all interconnected. So it's peace education and training, domestic peacebuilding, international peacebuilding, technology for peace, arms control and disarmament, peacebuilding information and research, human rights and economic rights are the main offices that it calls for. And when the Peace Alliance was originally founded, it was founded on this. This was its founded basic legislation. So it was to create a Department of Peacebuilding and to work for a culture of peace. And we've also now expanded that to supporting a lot of other legislation that is peace related.
Nancy, if I could just butt in, Marianne Williamson ran for president in 2020. And one of her proposals was to create the U.S. Department of Peace. So people have heard this, whether they remember it or not, it's out there. It hasn't been put out on a small scale. It's been put out to the country. Right now it's the Department of Peacebuilding Act of 2021, H.R. 1111.
2023. It was
23.
It was just reintroduced last week.
Okay, great.
So now we have, it was introduced with 27 original co-sponsors. We just got on a new co-sponsor today. So we have 28 at the moment and working our way up. So I'm sure people are aware you have to introduce a bill every time there's a new Congress. And so there's been a Department of Peace or Peace Building or Department of Peace and Nonviolence. In our Congress, we call the modern age bill since 2001. And what we mean by that is where we recognize the interconnection between domestic violence and international violence and the connection between the root causes of violence and the root conditions of peace. So there's been this modern era bill in every Congress, starting with Dennis Kucinich in 2001 through 2011. And then when he left Congress, Barbara Lee from California has been the sponsor since then. Throughout our history, we've had this idea going on since the days of George Washington. There were something like 80 bills introduced in the 60s and 70s and 80s for department, for offices or commissions or departments of peace. All of those focused on international peace building. So that's the distinction.
And this Department of Peace Building would have a secretary of the Department of Peace Building, just like at the federal level, just like there's a Secretary of Treasury, Education, mm-hmm. Defense, and all the rest. So this is a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're saying that a voice of peace deserves to be at the table of our government, that we need to consider peace building options in all the decisions we make, because we have plenty of input from the military and industrial and other parts of society, but we need this to be a key part of our decision making in this country. So,
yeah. It is certainly an exciting development. We're running out of time here. I will put forth to you one other question, and that is on this healthy planet and the work that we've done and on this show, we've paid a lot of attention to hunger and climate change. And when you think of a world where there's climate change and potentially billions of refugees and hunger, where you've got hundreds of millions of people who are hungry, tens of millions who are dying every single year as a result of hunger and related diseases, and here we are in a world where we're fighting against it. We're fighting. We're saying it's as if it's a partisan issue. And one of the base factors behind hunger is that we're using 83% of our lands to feed animals. Most of that food is being wasted as opposed to growing food directly for people. And again, with all this hunger in the world, it's just unfathomable that we could use all of that farmlands to create just 18% of our calories. So do you address hunger and food in the Peace Alliance?
I would say it's built into everything. We recognize definitely to have peace, we all have to be fed. We have to have health care. We have to have healthy water. We have to, have universal education, all the things that the 17 Sustainable Developments of the United Nations work for. I mean, we're really recognizing more and more the connection between peace and climate change. And not only, is it related to displacement of people and violence, but there was a recent study, a Lancet study of 10,000 students and showing that up to 59% of them were very or extremely concerned about climate change and said that it impacts their mental health. So the same would go, I think, if you're not fed, if you're not clothed, if you don't, if you're experiencing violence in your neighborhoods all the time. I mean, this is all interconnected.
Absolutely.
So that's the short answer, I would say.
Okay. That's great. And we're pretty much out of time. So Deanne, with all the things that the Peace Alliance is doing, there's so much to read about the Peace Alliance on www.peacealliance.org. But give people an idea of what they can do to be part of the solutions that you've discussed and also to support the Peace Alliance.
Yeah. So, yes, there is a lot of information on our website. And I'm so grateful to all of the members of our organization that work so hard to bring that information to one place where you can find it all. On the website, you can click on join us, and there'll be a link there to sign up for to get emails. We do we send weekly emails out on Mondays because we do offer virtual programs throughout the weeks. So that weekly email will tell you about what kinds of programs are happening that week that you can be involved in. So that's a way to get involved. Of course, we are a nonprofit that relies heavily on the sustainability of our donors and folks that want to partner with us in to co-create this society. So you'll find all kinds of different places to donate on the website to support this work. We always truly appreciate any donation, but if you're able to commit to a monthly donation, that really helps our monthly sustainability to do the work that we're doing. There's lots of actions. If you want to be able to communicate with your elected officials about pieces of legislation that are important to you, there's a button on the website, a blue button that says Take Civic Action Now. You can click on that, and that has a list of what we call actions. They're just one click. You can send an email to your elected officials, depending on if it's a House bill or a Senate bill. And then also you can send information to your elected officials that you want them to support the Department of Peacebuilding, which is our primary piece of legislation that we support. So,
and we are officially out of time at this point.
Yeah. Okay.
Deanne Tate, the Peace Alliance Leadership Council Managing Director, Nancy Merritt, the Leadership Council Department of Peacebuilding Lead, and Yelena Popovich, the Peace Alliance's Leadership Council Practicing Peace in Schools Lead. Thank you so much for the work you're doing and for taking all of this time to join us on The Healthy Planet.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you for having us.
Such a pleasure. And this is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. I've been speaking to three wonderful members of the Leadership Council of a group called the Peace Alliance. Their mission is to educate, advocate, and mobilize people into action to transform systems and public policy toward a culture of peace. You can find out more about the Peace Alliance at www.peacealliance.org. That's peacealliance.org. And that'll do it for this evening's show. I'll be with you again at the same time on the first and third Fridays of each month at 6 p.m. And the next show will be on the 17th of March. And when I'm not here, stay tuned to hear more excellent natural alternatives programs with cutting-edge health, environmental, social justice issues, and much more every Friday at this time. For more information on Healthy Planet and our radio shows, email us at info@healthyplanetusa. You can also visit our website at www.healthyplanetusa.org and check out our Facebook page at Healthy Planet USA. Until next time, stay strong, relax, make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right. Become an active participant for peace on our planet with your thoughts, actions, and words. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four and multi-legged friends. And finally, remember to enjoy every single moment of existence on this beautiful planet that we all share. Good night.
A stay in the hospital for people of all ages can be a stressful and challenging experience, but every day, teams of volunteers in UCLA's People Animal Connection, or PAC, make the lives of patients and their families better.
You see the patients get happier and more relaxed. They kind of forget that they're in a hospital bed.
The visits are provided to hospitalized patients without cost. Learn how you can get involved at uclahealth.org/PAC.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes to your driving habits can cut tailpipe emissions and improve fuel efficiency. Drive smart. Go easy on the brakes and gas pedal. Get regular tune-ups by following your vehicle's maintenance schedule. Check your tire pressure. Combine as many activities and errands into one trip as possible. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.